A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's March 15th, 1901. And another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
When the second most famous thing about you is that you cut off your own ear, you'd have to be a bit worried about what the most famous thing might be. Fortunately, in the case of Vincent van Gogh, or Van Gogh, or Van Gogh, as many English people call him, that thing was that he was an excellent painter, as nearly all the world knows. But the world didn't know that when the first major exhibition of his works was mounted today in history in 1901, almost 11 years after his death.
Yes, and if you were to say, what's the third thing everyone knows about Vincent van Gogh, it's probably that he was unsuccessful and underappreciated in his own lifetime. And usually the things that everyone knows are the misleading things, aren't they? But actually, I'd say those are the three crucial facts of his biography. He was a great artist, he was incredibly depressed, and he was incredibly unsuccessful. In his lifetime, he had only sold one painting. So this exhibition at the Bernheim-Jeune Gallery in Paris on this day of 71 paintings of his 11 years after he took his own life was the moment that made the name Van Gogh for the whole world.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a truism that Van Gogh lived and died in unrecognized obscurity, but it's not strictly true, which we could get into later. But certainly on this day, he was nothing like a household name. So it was all the more exciting that the show was a huge success. The art critic Octave Mirbeau wrote in a review for Le Figaro, "His was a restless, tormented mind, full of inspired ideas, vague and ardent, drawn perpetually towards the summits where the mysteries of human life reveal themselves." And another visitor to the exhibit, the painter Maurice de Vlaminck, later recalled, "That day, I loved Van Gogh better than my own father." But true to the underappreciated genius vibe that hangs over any mention of Vincent, no paintings were actually sold on the day.
Yeah, I mean, it is regarded as this really landmark retrospective that inspired a whole new generation of avant-garde artists in France, the Fauves, and they idolized Vincent van Gogh. Art dealers in Germany then leapt on the bandwagon, and it also allowed Johanna van Gogh-Bonga in Holland to start feeling good about ignoring her brother's advice to cart that attic full of paintings to the dump, because she was the sister-in-law of Van Gogh, married to his brother, and she had kept a bunch of his paintings thinking that they were great, and she had put this exhibition on. Turned out the world agreed with her.
Yeah, and Johanna's role really cannot be overstated, I think, in bringing Van Gogh to the world. Because I did choose those words carefully when I said the world, because yeah, it is that thing about him becoming a household name. Amongst the art establishment, he was already known because he'd lived with his brother Theo in Paris for a period, and Theo was an art dealer. He was also Vincent's benefactor, because Vincent never made any money as an artist. Theo recognized his genius and funded his lifestyle throughout his life, and as payment in kind, received paintings from Vincent and introduced him to Lautrec and Gauguin and Pizarro and Seurat, all of whom recognized that Vincent was brilliant. So then when Vincent died, Theo made it his mission to bring these paintings to the world in exactly the way Johanna would later do. The reason it was Johanna that did it rather than Theo is that Theo also died just a couple of months after Vincent. And so Johanna's left with an attic full of Van Gogh paintings, the knowledge that the art world loves him, but the rest of the world doesn't know about him, and the mission statement that her late husband had left her, which was essentially, you need to tell the world about my brother's genius. Mm. So people often say what a visionary woman she was, and I'm not underplaying her role. As I said, it's crucial. But at the same time, what else are you going to do in that situation? She made it her life's work to bring Vincent van Gogh to the world, and then she did.
And for the decade or so between Van Gogh's death and this retrospective exhibit, she had been tirelessly organising small exhibitions of his work and basically haranguing critics and painters to attend. And not everyone was convinced. The Dutch painter Richard Roland Holst wrote to a friend, "Mrs. Van Gogh is a charming little woman, but it irritates me when someone gushes fanatically on a subject she knows nothing about. And although blinded by sentimentality, she still thinks she is adopting a strongly critical attitude."
I mean, he managed to keep his misogyny in check. That's the crucial thing.
He referred to her admiration for Vincent's paintings as schoolgirlish twaddle. You can kind of see why. This idea that, well, she was his sister-in-law and she's banging the drum about this obscure artist that never really made it because he was her brother-in-law and she has an attic full of his paintings which she probably wants to sell. So there was some scepticism that she had to wade through to even bring him to the attention of the kinds of people who could help organise these larger scale exhibits like the one that happened today at the Boheim Jeune.
I mean, it's astonishing that Van Gogh stuck with being an artist himself prior to even turning his hand to doing paintings. He'd had a range of different occupations in his life. He'd been a salesman, a language teacher, a bookseller. At one point, he considered becoming a minister like his father, and he studied for almost a year to prepare for the entrance exam to the School of Theology in Amsterdam, but then he refused to take the Latin portion of the exam because he considered it a dead language, correct, for peasants, maybe not quite so correct, and this led to his denial from the school, and eventually he discovered his true calling as an artist. But again, he really wasn't successful in his lifetime, but he was incredibly prolific. He did over 900 paintings between the age of 27 and 37, and even more drawings and sketches, which works out to a new artwork nearly every 36 hours. This in spite of the fact that you're not selling anything. It's astonishing that he stuck with it.
And that's if you average it out across that 10-year span. But actually, he was only painting full-time for the last 5 years of his life. And a lot of that time, he was in an asylum.
Yeah, it was really his mental illness that kept holding him back. And in fact, in the 6 months before his death, he was beginning to attract some serious notice. He had an article about him in the Mercure de France, which was a literary magazine, in January 1890, which called him a genius. You know, 2 months later, he was invited to exhibit 10 of his paintings in a show on the Champs-Élysées. Monet called his work the best in that exhibition. But all of these opportunities were happening while he was living in an asylum. You know, he ultimately took his life 2 months after he left. And at this point, he had made only one documented sale. There is speculation that he may have made some unofficial sales as well. But the only one that we have the receipt for, if you like, he received 400 francs from his friend's sister, Anna Bock, for his painting The Red Vineyard. However, it wasn't like she brought it from his bedroom drawer as a favour to her brother or something. She saw his painting in an exhibition in Brussels. So he was attracting notice, it's just he was never able to capitalize on it.
Incidentally, some historians do believe that maybe it was Gauguin who cut off Van Gogh's ear and that the pair conspired to blame it on Van Gogh so that Gauguin could escape from the police. One bit of supporting evidence is that Gauguin was a really accomplished swordsman and they'd certainly had this massive blow up of an argument. But what isn't known is whether the story that they told to the cops was the truth of the matter. Was it that he did it himself in a fit of rage, or was it the high point of this huge
clearly
this,
was
this sort of battle between them?
Yeah, this sounds like a story that would have been made up by Joanna van Gogh Bonger, frankly.
Well, the elements of his life that were hard to market at the turn of the 20th century were the things that didn't get marketed, actually. The self-abuse, the substance abuse by Johanna. So it really shows that the art by itself, marketed properly, did have the opportunity to cut through without the biography. We're so obsessed now with the accompanying biography because we know it and it's fascinating. But actually, she didn't mention any of his inner torment, apart from what was evident in the self-portraits, when she was displaying the works. They were of interest anyway, and they were of interest because they were so modern. The sort of general Western art scene at the turn of the 20th century was, in Europe, you know, grand, slick, historical scenes. That was fine art, wasn't it? You know, anything that had visible brushstrokes or bright colours, which were Van Gogh's signature styles, were thought to somehow betray the artist's lack of skill. And yet, when you saw all the paintings together, you saw that it was far from not having a skill, it was a unique voice that you were seeing.
And one of the visitors to the Bernheim Jeune Gallery to see this first major retrospective of Van Gogh's work was a Berlin gallery owner called Paul Kassirer, whose enthusiasm for it almost single-handedly spread his reputation across first the German art world and then Europe more generally. And although he did gain that reputation quite quickly among European art critics, you know, as you mentioned, this was the era when mainstream art was pretty conservative and was often trying to measure itself against photography in terms of realism, less interested in more surreal and abstract paintings. This avant-garde style was quite slow to reach mainstream acceptance until the post-World War I era, you know, radical cultural changes, the conservative establishment and the public both starting to embrace Van Gogh very quickly. He was very quickly established as one of the greats in that era, to the point that when Evelyn Waugh wrote Brideshead Revisited, his protagonist Charles Ryder arrives at Oxford in the 1920s and promptly decorates his student digs with, quote, a reproduction of Van Gogh's sunflowers over the fire. So, but this time it was very much entrenched as...
That was the cliche. That was the Che Guevara poster.
Yeah.
quite. Scarface on the dollar sign.
And so another week of retrospecting ends. But next week begins a day early at Club Retrospectors. Join us now to get an exclusive episode every Sunday. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.